Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 28. I'm Dan Tomlinson, joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy. Rich, how you doing, mate?
I'm relieved. It's over. No more.
Yes.
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yes, that's it, mate. It's absolutely the same as you. Relief is the main emotion. Yep. Glad
it's
all
the, it's
over.
It's the overriding emotion, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Wakefield on Friday night, absolutely gagging for that hooter to go, that final hooter. And when it did, it was like, oh, thank God for that. Right, let's go. Yeah. Don't have to come back till February now. Get in.
Yeah, horrible, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And that's unfortunately what it's been like going to watch LFC these past few weeks, where you knew what was going to unfold. And that's the problem. I mean, players going through the motions, little desire, no enthusiasm, no energy. You know, getting beat by oppositions who just want it more. And that was Wakefield in that first half. They wanted it more. They blew us away, 34-0 up. And, yeah, we won the second half, so we've got that to shout about, get the open-top bus out. But, yeah, 44-12 in a season for now is obviously not good enough, but wasn't surprising, was it? That's the most worrying thing.
No, it's not. Look, I hate to do this, but, I mean, if we look at the positives of it, at least it shows that when we've only got pride to play for, we can't even play for that. Therefore, it really shows that we need change. And if nothing else, it absolutely underpins and underlines everything we've been saying and everything everyone's been saying, that we're not good enough, that things need to change, that it's deep-seated, that it's wrong and bad, and that it needs to change, and it needs to change bloody quickly. And thank God for small mercies. You know, if we'd have come out and we'd have blitzed Wakefield by 40 points, we'd have all gone, where's that been all season? Oh, wow, well, there you go. We'd have walked away with a bit of a spring in our step. But no, that hurt. And it was symptomatic and it was typical of what we've been doing. And to be honest, that's probably going to do us a bit of good in the off-season, because people are going to be hurting and people are going to want to put that right, hopefully, if we have this change in personnel that's been promised.
And again, it's a big ish, because we've been here before 3 years ago, where the owner said virtually the same thing. It's like he's got cut and paste on Microsoft Word, because he didn't do anything 3 years ago. He says the same crap every year at membership renewal time about how everything's going to be much rosier next year, and we're going to have a great squad, and we're going to be able to compete for this top four that he always goes on about. And if he's feeling really optimistic, he'll throw in those, you know, that word silverware. And it's just, oh, Christ. It's just every year. And it drains on you as a fan, because you just think enough is enough. You know, I'm absolutely sick of it. I'm absolutely sick of ranting about Hull, of going every week and seeing it.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, at least I'm insulated from it, because I don't have to put up with it in person. I mean, I hesitate to make this as a parallel, but you almost feel like a battered partner. You know, you keep taking the club back. You keep, oh, it'll change. You won't do it again. Do you know? It feels a bit like that. And that sounds like victim blaming, which is the last thing I want to do. But you know what I mean? You feel like that. You feel like, you know, you're kind of punch drunk. You're waiting for the next thing to happen. And when it happens, every time it happens, you're a little bit more insulated to it, and you're a little bit more numb to it, and it doesn't hurt as much. And unfortunately, the longer and the more it goes like that, then you get totally insulated to it, and then you don't care one way or the other. And that's the stage that we don't want to get to, you know, because you still care. I still care. The majority of our fan base passionately cares. That's why we're so vocal about it. You know, if we didn't care, we wouldn't buy season tickets. We wouldn't buy a replica shirt, you know? I wouldn't have a Hull FC registration number on my car. I wouldn't be tattooed if I didn't care, you know? I care. I care passionately, and that's why we're so vocal about it.
Absolutely.
The danger is that the longer it goes, you know, the less passionate you get.
Well, that's it. It drains you, doesn't it? And unfortunately, everyone's tolerance levels is obviously different. And Hull FC, you've got a hardcore of people that will go, you know, rain or shine, no matter how bad it gets. But not everyone has that mentality. And why should they? Because, you know, it's a lot of money going to watch Hull every week. It's 50 quid to go on an away game. It's 25 quid to get in at Wakefield. If you went on the coach, it was £15. Obviously, a little bit cheaper with petrol, and you split the cost with your mates. But, you know, you're full, you drink. You're easily topping 50 quid for an away day. When you get served that, you're thinking, why the hell have I just pissed away 50 quid? I've got mates who just, quite frankly, just refused to do that on Friday night, because they knew what was going to happen, and I ain't going. And I don't blame you. I do not blame him at all. And I said to him at the time, I don't blame him at all. I saw him at football on Saturday. Ironically, that's the complete opposite at the minute. That's something you enjoy going to. It's something that you feel welcome at. It's something that you can have a laugh with your mates and just watch the action and have a good time. And that's what live sport should be about. But watching LFC isn't like that, because for a start, the brand of rugby is shite. We've got players that are past the best. We've got players that are overweight, players that are too slow, players that show no heart. You know, and the worst of it all, it's like some of them don't even give a crap. That's what worries me the most, again, because you see some of the attitudes and the mentality. I mean, and this is where we can, you know, think back to the start of the year and think, yeah, it was totally different. It wasn't like that, yeah. And yeah, it won. We were great. We showed fight. We showed resilience. But there's obviously been a line drawn through that season where we've gone completely away from that, and we've seen the worst version of Hull FC come out. And it's like we always say, the manner of defeat. When we first got beat at the start of the year by Wigan, the manner of defeat, I can live with that. Catalans at home, just beaten by a better team, we put the graft in, I can live with that. What I can't live with is defeats like that on Friday night, defeats like Salford on Bank Holiday Monday, where the towel is thrown in and they just get beat by an opposition who want it more. That's not good enough.
Yeah. 3 months ago, we were saying, you know, we were getting beat, but at least it wasn't like when, you know, the infamous night where Radford got sacked, when we, you know, the team threw in the towel. You know, we were always saying that at least we had a dig, and it just seems like the last 3 months, 4 months, you know, it's just gone downhill, hasn't it? And it's just gone downhill pretty quickly, which is horrible and worrying. And, you know, it makes you look at what's changed and when it changed, you know, and what was the catalyst for us all of a sudden falling off the perch, you know? I don't know. I don't know the answer, mate. You know, if I knew the answer, I'd be a professional coach. But
or a psychiatrist. Yeah,
or a psychiatrist. A sports psychologist. There's a bit of money. There's some money in sports psychology, I tell you. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, what do you do, mate? It's horrible.
It is. It's an horrible situation. And a lot of people are quick to hide behind COVID and injuries, but it's more than that for me, because the difference in performance is a complete utter contrast. And, you know, you're seeing some worrying things come out on social media right now, like players don't like the coach. You know, people are saying that, oh yeah, some players' off-field antics aren't good enough, without naming or shaming, or actually telling us what we're doing. So it just sounds like speculation, and, you know, what old like with Chinese whispers, it's ridiculous. But you've got people tweeting on Twitter about players slagging other players off for all to hear at the Magic Weekend. We've got players that are too close to a section of fans, and they just get off the hook all the time. And ironically, it's those players that haven't done anything this year or are far from our best. Yeah. And I look at it, and it goes back to the leadership group that we pinned a few weeks back when we did that call. And I ask myself, do they want to play for this coach, or are they quite happy just to throw him under a bus like they did Lee Radford? And to be honest, the ones that have been here a long time, like they did under Peter Gentle as well, because let's not forget, they threw him under a bus. I mean, that was embarrassing. Huddersfield away 2013. They did 100%. Not give a crap. And this cancer at the club, it's been going on too long. And there's a common denominator, and it's players that get too comfortable, too pally, and they think that they run the place. And this is why it really winds me up. And they're the players that get off the hook by sections of our fans. But these are the type of players that let us down all the time. And again, it goes back to attitude and mentality. Do they want to be great again? I will name them again now. Does a Danny Houghton, does a Max Knee, does a Scott Taylor, does a Jamie Shaw, do they want to be great again? Because I look at Hull FC right now, and they are far from our best players. Hull FC's best players this year, Chris Satai, Jake Connor, Adam Swift, they're all in, they're, you know, they're imports, whether they come from overseas or whether they come from other clubs in Soap League.
Yeah, they're not Hull born.
Exactly. We've got a massive problem here, we really have. And again, enough is enough, and this is where changes have to be made. I am absolutely sick of it, and I'm far from being on my own. As are you. You know, you're absolutely sick of it. And again, we're not on our own, mate. That's the thing, we're not. People are opening their eyes to it now. They're absolutely sick of it. They want change. You know, they're letting the club know how they feel. Their emotions are obviously getting the better of them at the minute, and they're angry. They are genuinely angry about what they're seeing right now, because it's not good enough, and it can't be accepted, and it can't be allowed to continue either.
No, you're dead right. You're dead right. And, you know, like I say, fingers crossed, the end of this season has really shown it up. It's put it into really sharp contrast. And maybe this is what we needed. You know, maybe hitting rock bottom like this is what will finally wake Pearson up. Because make no mistake about it, and I get what you're saying, and we've said it 2 weeks ago, we did that, 2-3 weeks ago, we did our cull, you know, and we were saying, you know, if Pearson comes out and says this again and doesn't do anything about it, well, then he loses people's respect, people's trust, people's everything. But at the end of the day, mate, what else can we do? He's our owner, he's our cash cow, he's the guy who puts all the money into the club. Without him, the club would fold. We have to trust him, because we've got no option. Unless someone comes and waves a magic wand and we somehow get a benefactor who's going to put 50 million quid into the place, you know, what other chance do we have? We don't. We need to trust him. We need to trust him to get it right, you know, and get the fan base being vocal helps that. But we've got to be careful we don't completely alienate, you know? But if we've hit rock bottom and he's seen it and his coach is saying to him, here's your problem, it's him, and him, we need to do something about it. We need to either get rid of two of them, or we need to get rid of all of them, or that's the main one, and if we get rid of him, the rest will fall into line. Well, then that's what we need to do. But it'd be interesting to see now, over the close season, exactly what happens.
Yeah,
because if these players are still under contract, they can just hold on. They say, I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to go. They'll just sit on the sidelines and take their money. You know, this is the issue we've got, is that we can say to a player, you can leave if you want. The player can still say no. The player can sit on the sidelines knowing that at some point in the season there's going to be an injury crisis and they're going to get called on because there's no one else. You know?
Yeah.
It's time to make some really difficult decisions, and Pearson needs to do it. And, you know, between him and his chief of staff and his head coach, they need to come up with some actual visible change. And they need to do it before Christmas.
I agree.
Because if they don't do it before Christmas, then you're going to have people with pass renewals and shirt sales and all of this stuff. That's all going to go by the by. And then you're going to get to February and the club's going to be skinned because there's no cash flow coming through. So they need to do something that needs to be visible and needs to be now.
No, absolutely. And again, it boils back down to the fact I said, Hodgson knows what his strengths are in his playing group. He'll know what those weaknesses are. I don't need to come out and say that in the media, because he'll know. And to be honest, we know. We're not stupid. You know, and the club have got to back Hodgson. They've obviously employed him for a reason. They've seen something in him. Obviously, he's been here before and done a bit of work at the club a few years ago, ironically under Peter Gentle. They've got to back him. They've got to listen to him. They've got to... If he wants this player gone, then we've got to get rid of that player. If he wants this one gone, get rid of him. If he wants to bring this one in, get him in. You know, there's no good looking and inquiring. I mean, look at social media this week. I mean, one guy said that all are trying to shop all the bloody players out. What? Even Carlos Tumbavavi, even Adam Swift, even Chris Stetta, Jake Connor. Yeah, it was embarrassing.
That's absolute crap.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. But again, they've got to listen to the club. You've got to back Hodgson. And it's interesting, a lot of fans are starting to get on his back as well. And it's like, we can't just go through a continuous cycle of, oh, get rid of the coach. Did that with Lee Radford. Did that with Andy Last. We've got to have some continuity with the coach. Otherwise, what's the point? You're just starting again. And again, I look back to your blogs last year, actually, and I had a good read of them this weekend. And when you were looking at the options for the coach, you went through a lot of, obviously, NRL systems. There was one or two big names as well. But we had to be realistic, and this is what you said. You're not going to get a Craig Bellamy, are you? You're not going to get a Wayne Bennett to come over here and coach a Super League club. And that's, I look at social media, and that's all they expect. You look at the good coaches that have come over here for St. Helens. You look at Christian Wolf right now. You look at Justin Holbrook, Michael Maguire at Wigan 10 years ago. They weren't been there, done that coaches in Australia. The ones that have come over here, learnt the craft, and then gone back over Australia and become good coaches. It's... You know, people said, oh, why don't we get Shane Flanagan? Well, why would he come to Super League when he's got another gig in the NRL as an assistant?
He's waiting for a head coach's job.
Exactly.
See, that's the thing, mate. The ones that come... Name a coach that's come to the Super League recently that's a named coach. There isn't any.
Well, exactly.
Nathan Brown came over to Huddersfield and then to Saints when he'd been sacked by the Dragons and he was unemployable over here. Went back over there, went to the Super League, rehabilitated his reputation. Newcastle now at Warriors. Do you know? None of them come over as massive stars. Christian Wolf never had a first team gig over here. You know, Maguire, it was his first job. Trent Robinson, when he went to the Catalans, that was his first head coach job. You know, that's the way it happens, mate. And you're not going to get, you know, you're never going to get a Wayne Bennett. You're just not.
No, absolutely. It's like fairy tale land at some point. And I look at Hodgson and think.
Hodgson's not the problem.
No, it's
Hodgson
absolutely
is not the problem.
No, agreed. 100%.
You know, and people saying Hodgson out, I'm sorry. And if you're listening to this, I will say it right now. You know nothing about rugby league. If you think Hodgson is the problem, you know nothing about rugby league. It is as clear as day that you have got a senior group of players that do not give a shit. That is as clear as day. And if you know anything about rugby league, if you've been watching rugby league for 5 minutes or 50 years, you can see it as clear as day. It has got nothing to do with the head coach. The head coach has come in, and for the first half of the season, he's performed miracles with a disaffected playing group. And then it's caught up with us. And other teams have caught up with the fact that Hull are all about enthusiasm, and they're all about push, and they're all about trying to... teams can't play around them because they've got a really good sliding defence. The only way to do it is to go through them, and then this is where we've done it. And after halfway through the season, we got found out. Right? And he's tried to plug those gaps by changing players and changing this and changing tactics slightly. It's not the coach's fault. It's about players not buying in. And if we need to get rid of them, we need to get rid of them now. It's got nothing to do with head coach. Nothing.
Nail and head. Absolutely, could not agree more. Totally, whatever other verbal ticks here, absolutely, completely, utterly, totally agree with you. That was,
totally.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. And again, it's the big question. Do they want to play for this coach, and do they want to become the best versions of themselves under this coach? If the answer to that is no, well, then there's the door, bugger off now. If you want to as a player, embed yourself truly and deeply into Hodgson's way of doing things, great.
You know what? And you've hit the nail on the head there, mate, right? Do you want to play for this coach? That's immaterial. Do you want to play for this club? The coach is part of the club. If you don't want to play for the coach, you don't want to play for the club. You know, and all of this, if it is the whole mafia, and it is the players that we've named in previous podcasts, and I think everyone knows who we're talking about, if they're saying, well, you know, the club's bigger than the coach and everything, well, yeah, fine, I get that. But not right now. Not when we're shipping 34 points in 40 minutes against Wakefield of all bloody times. You know? No. Absolutely not. You don't want to play for that coach, and you're throwing your performance away in the hope that you're going to get the coach sacked so you can get one of your mates in, or you can have a little bit of an easier life, or because he's telling you that you're slowing down and you need to change the way that you play, and you don't like the home truths that he's telling you. Well, I'm sorry, that's your issue. Not the coach, and not the club, and not the supporters. It's your issue as a player. If you can't get better, you can't perform how you used to perform, there's the door.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect chance now to actually look at the positives of this season, because it hasn't all been a disaster. And like you just said at the start, people were adapting to Hodgson's way of doing things. I mean, for me, the three massive changes, one, you singled out, so I'll give you the credit for that. That was Chris Sattai, obviously the power of starting him and using him much better than we were doing last year. And obviously we've bore the fruit of that because he's been nothing short of phenomenal. Second one was obviously Adam Swift, you know, giving him the shot from the word go. And he's been nothing short of sensational when he's played, scoring, you know, tries for fun, getting walking tries as well, showing his pace. And obviously that's the type of winger that Hodgson wants to implement. And now we've got another one in Daniel McIntosh, so great, box tick there. And the third one was putting Jordan Lane at loose man, which... I mean, who saw that coming after the year that Joe Cater had last year? But it's proven the right decision, because Jordan Lane is dependable. He is obviously adaptable. He is versatile. He's been outstanding. His lad running is probably the best at the club. He's, you know, he's not a slouch. He's quite quick for a forward. And he's also got a little bit more size than Cater as well, which what people don't realise. He's a lot stockier than Cater. And yeah, he's been phenomenal. But that was obviously a change that Hodgson brought in, because he realised that we need a bit of size in the pack, even if it is only a slim difference in compared to a sour satire. But...
And that's what he's had to do, because we were short of a prop.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And because, you know, for massive portions of the season, you had Taylor and Matongo out together, who would have either been part of the rotation or at least part of the match day squad.
Well, 100%,
you know, so you had two of your big bodies out, so you had to do something.
Yeah.
So it was a stopgap, but it was a successful stopgap.
Absolutely.
To me, the biggest positive of the year has been Connor.
Yeah.
At fullback, revelation at fullback, playing in a settled position and getting his hands on the ball when he wants it, when he demands it, injecting himself into the line, being able to take a step back and not panicking and not being. You get the ball, you make a decision. You get the ball, you make a decision. At fullback, you step back a little bit and you go, no, I'm not going to go into this tackle. I'm not going to go into the next tackle. I'll run around the back for tackle four because I can see what's going on here. You know, that takes a different type of player. And when it's done right, the best fullbacks will be the best player in the team. Trbojevic, you know, Tedesco, you know, as an example over here. And Connor's got the power to be one of those, and I thought this year he's been a revelation at fullback.
Absolutely. You know, at one point we're saying, you know, this is the best player in the competition. I think as the season's gone on, unfortunately, he's not quite at that level, because Sam Tompkins is the best player in the league for me, and by a substantial, you know, difference. But he has been Hull FC's best player, as Jake Connor. And I mean, you think of all our problems in the second half of the season. He's finished the year with 22 try assists in Super League, which is nothing short of ridiculous. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? He comes in at fullback and he makes it look effortless. These final balls that we've seen to Adam Swift, that we've seen to Bretta Fremo, those blokes are getting walking tries. When the hell did Fatullo Talanoa get a walking? Never. Never. He had to perform a miracle.
Or
do one of them the mental finishes where everything but his fingertip is in the air and he's, you know, it's ridiculous. And yeah, but we actually get walk-ins now because we've got a structure and we've got a fullback who can actually put that ball on a plate. And yeah, Jake Connor has got some areas on the defensive side of his game. I mean, ironically, the England Rugby Union coach, Eddie Jones, came out and said he needs to work on his fitness. And obviously it was met with a bit of fumour from rugby league fans. But he's right, and Connor admitted that fitness has been a problem for him. And you know, if he can improve on that, and if he can improve the defensive side of his game, then he will become the complete fullback. And then you're thinking, Christ, you know, what an absolute top quality player we've got here.
Totally. Just before we started this, I was just having a bit of a look around the internet and stuff, and I happened onto the old Daily Mail page, which I try and keep away from because I hate them as a publication. But they were like, we pinpoint where Hull FC's season went wrong. That was their big thing, you know. And they were saying, it was COVID, and it was this, and it was that, and it was the other. And I can tell you four places where our season went wrong, and it's four injuries, right? First one was Griffin doing his Achilles at Saints.
Yeah.
Because we looked unbalanced in the backs from that point onwards. Because then we had to bring, you know, you had to play Farima and you had to play Fanua, really, after that. So that was the first one for me. Second one was Connor going down in the ridiculous bloody international friendly for the All-Stars. That was catastrophic for us because he was the best player in the comp at that point. And when he came back, it took him a while to get back into any semblance of form. And the other two both happened in the Derby game. It was Reynolds going down and Cater going down. That's when our season finished. We didn't win a game after that.
Yeah.
Or did we win one game?
No, you're right. We haven't won a game after the Derby. We've lost five. And obviously 9 and 10.
At that point, when Reynolds went down, now you can say what you like about Reynolds. You can say that he hasn't set the world on fire and he hasn't been the superstar that we all expected. But Hull are a better team with him in the team. His organisation, he's just exuberance. The fact that he's running and he's absolutely pelting into tackles and he's chasing down lost causes, right? That's what we need.
And it rubs off on other people as well.
Yeah. He inspires people around him, right? And I wrote a blog on it last week about, you know, sometimes the best player in the team isn't the best player in the team. The most influential player sometimes isn't the most skillful, sometimes isn't the highest paid, sometimes isn't the highest profile. It's the catalyst. It's the guy that it makes everyone around work harder. You know, 2016, it was Pritchard for us. You know, didn't have a great season, had an average season for us in his 1 year with us. But we wouldn't have won at Wembley without him because of the camaraderie and the spirit that he brought to the team. You know, and it's the same with Reynolds. And when he went down in that Derby game, our season went with him. And then when Cater went down with the Achilles just after it, I mean, that just compounded it. Because you've got a player there that's chasing lost causes, and then you've got Cater who's going 50 tackles a match, which was taking the pressure off Houghton.
Mm.
You know, as soon as Cater went down, Houghton started to look bang average again. And Houghton's gone from great to terrible to in between this season. He's fluctuated wildly. But as soon as Cater went, that was it for Houghton. and that was it for our season.
Yeah, that's us.
There's your 4 points. Yeah, that's honestly, there's your four points where we screwed.
That's the brutal reality of it. And the Reynolds thing needs highlighting even more because, again, some people slag him off, but Hull have won one game in Super League this year without him. And the same goes for Connor. They've won one game without Jake Connor in Super League this year, and that was the Huddersfield game. Obviously, when the ragtag side managed to beat him at the KCON, the MK.
You know, he's not going to score a try with every touch, but it's what he does to players around him. It's getting in the opposition's face. You know, it's inspiring the people around him to go, geez, look at that. He had a 10% chance of getting that ball, and he threw himself in where the tackle, you know, people's boots were flying and everything, and he got the ball. You know, chasing down players that you thought had gone. You know, throwing himself against massive props in the opposition. You know, taking the line on, digging into the line, realizing that to pass would be difficult. So taking that hard tackle, not taking the easy way out. I tell you what, you can say what you like about him. He hasn't shirked anything this year, Reynolds. He might have dropped the ball a bit. He might have made the wrong decision and everything, but they're all genuine errors. He hasn't shirked an ounce of work.
No, you're right, and it was apparent again in that Leeds game, which was an awful attacking LFC performance without the fullback Jake Connor. But Reynolds was arguably the best moments of LFC, and that game came from Reynolds. Obviously, he put the pass out to Adam Swift for the try, and also, you know, things like running 50 yards and throwing someone into touch and putting him in the corner flag, and that was a phenomenal play, and everyone was standing up on the feet, clapping that, thinking, wow, you know, this guy's energy is absolutely ridiculous. And we saw that.
Yeah.
Again, we saw the intensity in the first two games, and it was infectious because everyone joined that ride and everyone bought into it. And this is what winds you up, because you look at the start of Hull FC this year and the qualities, again, go back to Brett Hodgson, the qualities that he either installed or reignited, because I must admit, I think it's a little bit of a lack of respect to say that these were in Hull FC already. There were some of them just needed reigniting, but our defensive prowess, our resilience, the fight in Hull FC was absolutely tremendous to watch, and we were loving it, weren't we? We was loving, you know, round two was going to Old Trafford after we beat Salford, and unfortunately,
let's do that. Let's go through. You know, I mean, like, first round against Huddersfield, workmanlike performance, we deserve to win. You know, after beating Salford at Salford round two, fantastic. We honestly thought we were going somewhere. Obviously, then there's the cup game against Featherstone. Then there's the draw against Warrington, which a really battling performance. You know, probably could have won it.
Probably should have won it. We came away from
that. Yeah, should have won it. Yeah, we came away from that going, wow, okay, something's building. The next game we go to Wakefield. We play Wakefield at home, and we sneak over the line against Wakefield. But it was one of them games where we really had to graft and grind out a result and everything. And you know, that's what we said at the time. You know, the resilience was what was new there.
Yeah, because it was a game that we wouldn't have won over the previous 2 years.
And certainly wouldn't have won at the end of the season either.
No, well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you had to applaud that. We're finding ways to win at that time, weren't we?
Totally. You get to the end of April and we go to Wigan and lose by 2 points. You know, and then beat them in the cup the week after. You know, so by the beginning of May, even, we were still going, this is looking good.
Yeah.
Then we get beaten by Catalans. But, I mean, obviously at the time we didn't know, but Catalans would go and win the entire, you know, go and get the League Leaders Trophy and everything and look bloody good value for it, right? Then we go to Headingley and beat Leeds. Then we lose to Saints. And then we lose to Saints in the Cup. Then we beat Cass. Then we smash Lee. Then we beat Huddersfield. And at this point, we're still sitting in that top three, top four. You know, we still won far more games than we've lost. And we're looking bloody good value for it. You know, and then bang, COVID.
You look beyond that as well. At that point, after that Huddersfield win, we're looking at our next six games thinking, crikey.
Yeah.
You know, these are winnable. Exactly. This point, is top two territory, maybe.
At that point, you're going, Salford would win them. Lee would beat them twice.
Yeah.
Rovers, we'd beat them twice. You're looking at it going, this is going to be fantastic. You know, and then we have 3 weeks off, 4 weeks off because of COVID. We come back, we get absolutely smashed by Huddersfield. Then we lose to Leeds. Then we lose to Saints. The Warrington game is cancelled. We lose to Catalans. We beat Rovers. Then we lose to Cass. We lose to Salford. We lose to Leeds. We lose to Wigan. We lose to Wakefield. I mean, that is the definition of dropping off a cliff, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's mad. It's crazy. It's literally a season or two left, isn't it? I mean, I think the emotions we were riding as fans, again, you go back to it, was enjoying the wins because, as I say, when you've got that graft and when you've got a team willing to go to the end of the earth to get a result, Jesus, as a fan, you can get behind that and you'll shout from the rooftops how good that is. But again, when you get a team that look like they couldn't give a crap when they get beat, it's frustrating. To be honest, it's more than frustrating. So, it's gut wrenching because
that's the difference.
We care.
By mid July, you look back at the season from at mid July when we had the COVID break. You look back at the season, you go, we might have been beat, but we've never thrown in the towel in any of those games.
Exactly.
You know, we got beat by a very, very good Catalan team. We're beaten by Saints. We've been beaten by Wigan. But apart from that, every one of those games you look at and go, yeah. And then, you know, and then we beat Wigan in the cup, don't we, as well, you know? And you look at it and you go, we got a modicum of respect back from that, you know. 7 days later, we go back to exactly the same team and beat them, you know? So that point where we had that COVID break, you look back and you go, wow, that's an 8 out of 10 season so far. And then, bang, we lose to Huddersfield. It's compounded by losing to Leeds. You can expect us to lose to Saints, but not at home and not by that amount. You know, we lost the match against Warrington, you know, we lost it to COVID. Catalans were always going to beat us because Catalans are the best team in the league. Rovers we beat, but then, like I say, Reynolds went, Cater went, and we just seemed to just go, who cares? Mm. 5 days later, after that fantastic performance against Rovers, we get beat at home to Cass, and then go to Salford and get smashed at Salford,
which was utterly embarrassing.
Yeah, absolutely. Should have beaten Leeds at Magic. We should have beaten them. We weren't great, but we should have beaten them. And if you hold the Wigan Warriors to 10 points, you beat them. Simple as. If you're going to hold any Wigan team through the years to 10 points,
you expect to beat them. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then at the end of the season, we're nothing to play for. We've proved that we don't care.
And it's a common occurrence. 2015, lost the last 6 games of the year.
Yes, yeah.
2018, obviously lost the last 11 games of the year. Even after winning at Wembley the first year, we only won 1 out of 5 post Challenge Cup. 2017, it was slightly better, but not the ending we wanted. 2019, lost the last 4, ended up missing out on the playoffs via bloody points difference. That's how close we were, despite throwing in the towel. You know, it's happened again this year. There's a common denominator there. And again, you look back to how our players overweight. Some of them just puddings. And we take the piss out of Conrad Orwell. We've got Maya Fnua. He's not fit.
Yeah.
He's not fit by any stretch of the imagination. Look at the physique of Carlos Tumavavi and tell me Maya Fnua's fit.
Yeah. Well, did you just to bring it over to the NRL, have you seen Joey Leilua at the Tigers? Dropped halfway through the season. Their big signing 2 years ago when he joined from Canberra Raiders, where he was a wrecking ball in the centres, has come to the Tigers, and the Tigers said, look, we'll sign your brother as well, Luciano, from the Dragons. You know, he can play in the second row, you can play in the centres, you'll be happy, you'll be nice and settled because your brother's here. Luciano Lua is kicked on and he's probably the best player in that team. Joey Leilua, gone backwards, been sitting in the reserves, has done nothing all year, and he's now been released from his contract, and his agent has come out and said, stick with him, he's going to try and put a bit of weight on and be a prop. What?
So
he's the laziest player I've ever seen in my life.
He's now going to be a prop.
He's going to be a prop. What?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Jesus Christ. He's going to put some weight on, he's going to retrain to be a prop.
Yeah, maybe that's the way forward for my hair for now, then. We need a prop, don't we?
Well, that's the thing, mate. He can't, because you can't trust him.
No.
You can't trust him because his handling is appalling.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah.
You know, because he's going to drop the ball in a tackle when he's driving it in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
You know, he's all right one every now and again coming out of yardage.
Yeah.
But doing that hard graft in the middle of the field, no.
Defensively, it would give me nightmares.
And look, when you look at a player that slows down a little bit in the centres or on the wing, and you think, well, they might make a decent second row forward when they're a little bit older and you know, they've got a little bit more beef on. You can't say that about Fnua. You really can't.
No.
Pains me to say it. No, because, you know, 2016, right. 2017 vintage Fanua, you know, could have done anything. But he had that appalling foot injury. He had a Lisfranc injury, which is what Scott Taylor had. And it's a long road back from a Lisfranc injury. You know, and he's just not looked the same player since. Tiger's cut him without thinking twice. You know?
That's that, yeah. Ruthless, that's what we need to be.
Well, it didn't do the Tigers any good because they replaced him with James Roberts, for Christ's sake. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, yeah, we've been down that road before, haven't we? We've spoke about mismanagement at the club, sentimental factors in re-signing players, bringing new players in, dishing out new contracts. We've been there, done that, and just for like a repeating, you know, repeating ourselves. But it is, it's frustrating. It's soul destroying, to be honest. And yeah, the club have got to obviously realise the error of their ways and sort it out. And that's obviously starts, like you'll say, right now before Christmas. Get it done, make some changes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned financial aspects a little bit earlier, and there's always a way, that's what I'll say. I mean, look at the way that Hull FC have got themselves under the cap now, but you look at the money that they've had. I mean, when it suits, they preach about record amount of commercial partners. They preach about record amount of members, record amount of shirt sales, merchandise sales.
Yeah.
But when it's going against them, they're suddenly cash strip, suddenly skimp.
Yeah.
I don't buy it all.
Because it's a very convenient it's a very convenient excuse, isn't it?
It is.
We'd love to do this, but we've got no money. You know, you get the feeling that 2022, and I don't want to write it off sitting here on the 20th of September 2021, but 2022 is going to be one of those kind of marking for time years, unless we could do something now. Because, like, you know, at the end of 2022, there is a frightening amount of cap space.
Yep.
Available, because, you know, your Houghtons, your Sneeds, your Taylors, your Fanuas, they all come off cap. They all, you know, Reynolds, Mau, probably, they all come off. And then you look at Houghton and at Hodgson and go, right, who do you want? Let's go out and get who you want. The issue is that you can't run a business like that. You can't look at a business and go, well, we'll mark for time next year, hope people stay with us, and try and do everything for the year after, because that's not going to cut it. So we need to have real change now to keep people interested next year.
And this is what gets me. A new hooker right now instantly improves the FC.
Absolutely.
Instantly. Like an overnight change. That's how easy it is. I'm not saying a new hooker is going to make us win at Old Trafford. That's stupid. But a new hooker right now would instantly improve Hull FC.
Yep.
That's how simple it could be.
And I'm not saying cut Danny Houghton loose. By any stretch of the imagination, keep him. Keep him and get
him.
And,
well, you can have him on the bench.
On the bench.
Yeah, exactly. And you can bring him on if, as I say, you don't want to. This new hooker, I mean, if you give me a preference right now, Hull FC should go sign Nathan Peets. Huddersfield just announced that they're not keeping him on. Go get him.
Absolutely.
Go get him now. Get rid of a quarter player.
Or Saliva Havili, for me.
Yeah, well, that's another good shout. And the quarter spot is there, because obviously we know that Freemo's going. Oh, gone
someone
now.
There's someone that's dynamic out of dummy half. Because Saliva Havili would frighten English defences to death from dummy half. Because he'll dart, and he's quick, and his distribution's good, and his decision-making's good. Do you know? But he's not an 80-minute hooker.
So then you have Houghton on the bench. You're not burning that hooker into the ground. You can bring Houghton on for a spell at hooker. Or, if this hooker's having a wow of a game, you bring Houghton on as a middle.
But not you bring him on and put him at loose forward.
Yeah, the distribution middle. Yeah, that's worked in the past. When the limited opportunities Jez Litton got, it worked.
Yeah, you put him at loose forward and you say to him, tackle everything that moves. And when we have the ball, you're another middle. Yeah. No, it seems to me to be fairly obvious, but there you go.
Well, yeah, exactly. And like I say again, I'll repeat it, that will change Hull FC overnight. But whether the club realise that, I mean, look at the names that's come out in the media this week. Joe Wardle, how's that going to improve Hull FC?
I know why do we need another secondary forward?
Well, yeah, is that what he is these days? I think he started off as a centre, didn't he? Back row, whatever.
But why do we need another back row? Are we done? We need a prop. We don't need a second row forward.
We need a prop over a back rower. I mean, I'd question the attitude of Andrea Savelli actually over the past few weeks, but not to the point where I'd say get rid right now. No, that's stupid. But yeah, we need prop, don't we? Everyone can say that. We need props. We've said that all year. We said that in January. We said that, obviously wasn't expecting Hull FC to go on a downward spiral right now. We expected us to be maybe in those fifth, sixth positions. But we were crying out for a prop then. Everyone could see it. I've been whinging about the Hooker thing for nearly 2 years now. We've got to get one. Everyone can see it. Journalists are coming out now. I saw the Independent one. What's his bloody name? Johnny Davidson. He's come out and said it. He don't care about, you know, pissing anyone off at the Hull FC. He'll just come out and say how it is. And he says he can see that Hull FC need a hooker. It's funny he can say that. Local media don't say that because they don't want to lose their access. But Hull FC need to get rid of certain players. And the hooker is the bloody huge department what they need to do. And everyone can see it. And then it goes to the prop. And then it arguably goes to a new scrum half. And then it arguably goes to a, last but least, you know, maybe an extra back row would be nice, but not in front of a prop, not in front of a hooker, and no, not in front of a half.
No, it's not the first thing on our shopping list.
Absolutely not.
And we can't go out and go, oh, he's available, let's have him.
That's like what they're doing. I mean, we got linked with a kid from Bradford, for God's sake. That's not the answer.
Yeah, I saw that.
I can't remember his name.
That's fine. There you go. Well, that's fine. Bring him in. But you say, you know, he's going to be. He's going to be less than 1% of the cap.
Do you know he's another Bradford Ash? That's the statue of him.
He'll sit in the reserves, and you know, if he's a find, he's a find. If he's not, we haven't lost anything. Fine, do it. But, you know, at the moment, we've got a quota spot available. You've got the likes of Marty Taparo looking for a club. You know, I've been banging that drum for 2 years that he would be perfect for us. I mean, like, fits like a glove for us. He's got a Tigers background, you know. He knows Hodgson. He's played for Samoa with Carlos Tumavava. He's played for Manly with Liggy Sow. You know, he falls into that Polynesian kind of, you know, that real kind of workhorse, lunatic prop. He's got 3 good years left in him. The likelihood is he'll pick up another NRL club, but he could make a lot of money going to England, and he could be a second marquee player for us, and we should be looking at that very, very closely, because he fits the bill for what we need so perfectly, it's not even funny.
But he's a household name as well, and household names sell seats. That simple.
And he looks... He couldn't walk past him in the street and not know who he was. He's box office. He's got those long dreads. You know, he's a family guy. There's never been a whiff of problem around him. He's a committed Christian, like a lot of Polynesian guys are. There's never been, like I said, he's never played up. He's never argued. He's never fallen out with his head coach, or certainly not in the last 6 years he's been at Manly anyway. You know, he would be perfect for us. Absolutely perfect. And all he's got to do is go to his head coach and go, what's this whole place about? And Des Hasler will tell him. And so will his head of recruitment, is Noel Cleland. He'll tell him. You know, if we've not made contact there, the second that he became available, we have massively fallen down on the job there.
Well, it probably shows the fall from grace that we've had.
Well, even if we make contact and they say no, you know, or he goes, I've had an offer from Leeds, or I've had an offer from, I don't want to uproot my family to England, I want to stay in Australia. But we need to have made contact. If we haven't made contact, well, then I despair. I really do. You know,
well,
I mean...
Well, it's a power when you can get a prop from Bradford.
Exactly. You know, I mean, gone are the days, aren't they, you know? Every single Super League club went in for Gareth Ellis when he became available, but he chose us.
You wouldn't happen now?
It wouldn't happen now.
Well, Adam Pearson might be a good talker. He might be able to persuade people to come to the club, but they'll look at him and think, hang on a minute, you say the same shit every year now. You've been here 10 years, what have you done? You know.
Yeah. But yeah, we you know, there are a number of very, very good players off contract at the moment that we should be absolutely smashing the door down for. And, you know, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, it does.
I want to be wowed and I want to be amazed, but I'm... My gut feeling is that it's going to be someone from Bradford and Joe Wardle. Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, rumours as well, that Hull inquired about Jacob Miller last week.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I think I said to you at the time when we got rid of him, you know, he's a bloody good player.
He's a good
Super League
player, but he's 29 now, he's the same age as me. Is he the answer? But will he do for a couple of years? Is he better than Max Snead? Probably right now, yeah. He probably is, yeah. But
he's not a long term answer.
No,
is he?
No, he's not. No. It'd be very interesting to see what road we go down with recruitment, and hopefully we can get something that'll excite us, that'll ignite that passion back and make us look forward to next year rather than dread it. I suppose one area where we have been very positive this year is obviously the announcements that the club have made about the academy stuff, and we've got to get that right. It is literally the backbone of every successful side in history. You only have to look at Melbourne Storm right now. As you'll say, their strength isn't one player, it is their system, it's their process. To an extent, it's been the same with Leeds, it's been the same with Wigan and St Helens over here as well. Yeah. And we saw a little bit more of that, obviously, on Friday night in Jacob Hookham getting his long-awaited Hull FC debut. Obviously, it was an unused interchange in the defeat to Catalans last month, but he got a fair run out on Friday night. He was obviously brought onto the field a lot earlier than he would have anticipated after injuries to Shaw and Connor Wynn. And, you know, he went well. I mean, I'm not going to say he was outstanding or anything like that, because he wasn't. It was a horrific Hull FC performance. But he had a go. He showed plenty of endeavour. He showed a lot of balls as well to take on Milan as a young kid. Ironically, showed a lot more about him than some of the senior players who were probably on 10 times their wage.
Yeah, he went out and played his natural game, which, you can only applaud.
You can only applaud that. And we just got to hope that, you know, these young players, we say it all the time and that never happens, but we need a core of the Hull FC side to be made of those players that come from our system. And to be fair, we had that in the cup winning years, because back then Josh Bowden was great, Danny Alton was great.
Yeah.
Chris Green even had his moments, you know, for us. I mean, he was phenomenal at Wembley. People are quick to forget that, but he was.
Yeah. Danny Washbrook at Wembley.
Exactly. 2006. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, Danny Washbrook.
Steadied the ship when he came on. Absolutely steadied that ship.
And we need that smattering to come to
the side. Amazing to see him get a try in his last game for York as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. Oh, good ending to the career as well. Because there's a couple more that retired for York, and obviously they got a good win over London as well at the expense of Whitehaven. That means Whitehaven going to the top six now, don't they? So that was interesting. Yeah. Just while we're on the Championship as well, good to see Toulouse secure the league leader's shield. And, you know, they've had it tough in that league, haven't they? 82-12, I think it was.
Prick, if that prick from Lee tries to do any kind of, you know, oh, you know, there might be a case for some sort of legal thing if Toulouse can't, piss off.
Yeah.
You were the worst team in the league all season. You deserve to go down. Toulouse are the best team in the division above. They deserve to go up. Can you imagine if that happened in soccer?
Oh yeah, exactly.
If the chairman of the team that finished bottom of the Premier League said, we're not going to go down, we're going to take the sport to the courts, and you know, I don't want Norwich City to come up because they're not half the patch of the team that my team are. Piss off.
Yeah.
Do you know, you're just living in Clapham, but unfortunately, it's symptomatic of the bloody Mickey Mouse nature of our league, that when someone's got a little bit of cash, they go, maybe. You know?
It wouldn't surprise you if it happened, though, either, would it? That's the worrying thing. Yeah.
Someone needs to take him aside and just go, you knew the rules when you came in, like it or lump it, you go down, fine. If you don't like it, sell the club.
The average fan wants to lose in Super League as well. They are much more exciting than Lee. Lee ain't even got a train station, for God's sake. You know, they're not the answer to Super League. Toulouse are. No. That's exciting.
Yeah.
It's fresh.
Yeah. And a Toulouse-Catalan derby next year. You know, team coming up from the first division and probably the way that Catalan's been playing, possibly the Super League champions.
Yeah, I really hope that happens.
You make that first game of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but, I mean, Catalan's winning Super League. What that could do to the French game as well, and that's a point. The RFL have announced that England will go down to Perpignan to play France. Fantastic. Yep. Don't bring them up here on a Wednesday night and play them at Sodden Lee. That's fantastic. Yep. Go down there. And it's just a shame that there's not two tests, maybe one in Carcassonne or Avignon as well. But I suppose, you know.
Do you want to listen to this?
If so, we want some commission with Champagne French Rugby League more than any other English bloke.
Yeah, we do.
I love it, though. I love it.
We should do it. When did I say they should do it? Where's the battles where you're doing it at Waterloo?
Yeah, Waterloo, you said, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Perpignan will do that. We'll take that. Yeah. Hopefully, there'll be a nice crowd there as well. And like you say, if Catalans don't win Super League, they can pray that down there. They can rub it in English faces. And
you'd
like to think that would rev the French team up and they'll give England a game. I mean, to be fair, they have done. I remember England going down to the south of France and only, you know, winning in scores in the region of like 32-18, you know, things like that, rather than them coming up here and us putting 80 points past them. What benefit does that? That doesn't do anything, does it? That doesn't help the sport. No, that doesn't help the international game.
The nice thing about what's happened with French Rugby League is that we've stood by the Catalans.
Yeah.
You know, we've stood by them. We've allowed them to grow and nurture. And we've slowly said to them, yeah, it's fine. You can have all these Aussie players and everything, but we've slowly whittled that down. And, you know, they've now got a bloody good coach in McNamara, who, incidentally, has been talked of in possible terms of taking over at West Tigers if they sack Madge Maguire. The Tigers board have been apparently discussing sacking Maguire, and he's one of the names on the sheet, apparently, is McNamara. But, you know, they've got a bloody good coach now. They've got a nucleus of really good French players. It's great for the game.
Yeah, and yeah, these nucleus of French players are only going to get better as well, because these are young players. They're not, you know, old has-beens or anything like that. Far from it. They're at the other end, you know, the other end of the career. They're at the very beginning. You think of people like Arthur Morg, Mathieu Legere. Yeah, that Arthur Morg is outstanding. I mean, what he did in that Magic weekend game, where he came out the back of the wedge play from James Maloney and set up the try for Joe Dudson, that was phenomenal. Absolutely brilliant. And you know, you got massive French forwards now. You think of Mikel Goodman, that Jordan Desiré. I think I've pronounced that right. I'm absolutely hopeless with French names, and obviously Samoan names, as many Hull FC fans love to point out, but I think I've done that right. But yeah, they are a success story for rugby league. French rugby league is a beautiful, beautiful thing, and we are all quick to forget that they once ruled the rugby league well before the Nazis bloody destroyed it. So,
even immediately afterwards, in the 50s, they were the team to beat.
They were, yeah, they were. Obviously, they had the first Farewell Cup, obviously, on French soil. And, you know, they've always had a love for rugby league. They absolutely love rugby league. They love the fact that they play rugby league. Look at us, we play rugby league. You know, they absolutely love that. How can you not admire it?
Exactly. It's an enclave of, you know, an enclave being a French word as well. I'm quite impressed with myself that I said that. But, you know, this little enclave of rugby league, you know, just in the south of France there, needs to be grown and watered and fed, you know, because the French love flair, you know, and they always used to get it from their rugby union team because, you know, they were always the entertainers, their rugby union team. You never really got any grind or any grit. But there were always, you know, players like Blanco, the fullback in the French rugby union team, was always like the, you know, the absolute pinnacle of their team. But you know, you get a population like that into rugby league with the more free flowing and the higher scoring and the more tries and all the rest of it. The sky's the limit. It really is. And the fact that there's a good news story about it, that they're successful. You know, there's the whole thing about it's the us against the Nazis. You know, I mean, Christ, what's not to love? You know, it just needs someone really good at marketing and communication to actually bring that to the fore and actually shout about it from the rooftops. But it looks like we're getting there, which is a good thing to say.
Yeah, absolutely, and that is a huge positive going away from Hull FC. Maybe we should do a rugby league podcast instead of a Hull FC podcast, because this is much more refreshing. I mean, it's NRL finals next, and they've been nothing short of phenomenal.
Oh, how good, excuse me, how good have the NRL finals been? That first round, week one of the finals, there's me writing blogs about how great Tommy Trbojevic is and how he's had the best run of form any player I've ever seen in my 40-odd years of watching the game. And then the Storm come out and completely smother him. The second half, he had one run for 9 metres. You know, just completely put a blanket over him and just stopped him playing. You know, then you had the Roosters just beat the Titans. You had the Bunnies beat the Panthers, which was an incredible game. And it was very much a battle of the head coaches and Bennett, the old master, just taught Ivan Cleary what it means to win a mind games, really, because Cleary completely went off on a tangent and kind of missed the point of everything after that game. And then obviously the Eels beating the Knights in a pretty dour game. But then, you know, last week, Trbojevic back to his best. Roosters were busted. You know, they limped into the finals and limped out, basically. You know, they had a season of appalling injuries and the Seagulls were very good value for the win with Trbojevic back to his absolute best. And then probably the game of the season so far, the Panthers just getting over the Eels 8-6. Some real controversy in that game and a real... I don't think anybody, if you'd have asked them before the game what the score was going to be, I don't think anyone would have said that game would have had less than... You know, anyone would have said the game would have had less than 30 points, never mind less than, you know, 20. 15.
Yeah.
You know, it was just incredible. The Eels showed some resilience and some defensive grit that I didn't think they had in them. And the Panthers showed less attacking prowess than I think they've shown for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, that they were, that was a real battle, a real war of attrition, and a very, very, very good game. I thought the Eagles were lucky. You'd have been happy though, obviously.
Oh yeah, gloating for my dad all weekend. It's been absolutely sensational. He is not happy. I think he's going to kick me out, to be honest.
But at the end of the day, right, we've got the final series that you should get now, because week three, major semi-finals, 1 versus 2, 3 versus 4. Now, if the Panthers had won that first game that they lost against Souths, it would have been Storm Souths, Panthers, Sea Eagles. So it would have been first against third, second against fourth. So your likelihood is you get a 1v2 grand final, which is how this is set up to go. The fact that the Panthers lost now means they're on the same side of the draw as the Storm, which means that the game that probably everyone was expecting to be the final is now going to be the semi. So Saturday is the Storm and the Panthers, and that is going to be an absolutely blistering game.
I can't wait. That's going to be phenomenal. Yeah.
And to be honest, I think the first game, the Friday game, the Bunnies against the Sea Eagles, I reckon that that's the game that every neutral looks at and looks at and goes, whoever wins that one, I'm going to support in the grand final.
Yeah.
Because most neutrals aren't going to support the Storm, and most neutrals aren't going to support the Panthers, I reckon. Manly used to be the team everyone hates. Not so much now, I don't think. I think the Panthers and the Storm are right up there. So it'll be the Bunnies-Seagulls game is just, that's going to be a hell of a game. Because, you know, you haven't got Latrell Mitchell playing for the Bunnies. He's out for the season now, suspended. But they haven't really missed him. And the Sea Eagles were blowing red hot up until, you know, getting beaten week before last. So, the Storm absolutely just managed to contain the Sea Eagles. I'd be interested to see if the Bunnies take a leaf out of that playbook and play the Sea Eagles in the way that they played the Panthers and stymied them. And it's fascinating this week.
And you sort of think, will the Storm try to do the same approach that they did with Turbo Thompson, Earth and Cleary, and take him out of the game?
Yeah.
And if they do that, then Jerome Luai is going to have to step up, and you could certainly argue he hasn't hit the heights recently as he did at the start
of
the season.
He's been very quiet. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem, though. He's phenomenal at the start of the year, wasn't he?
And the other thing as well, every single coach would have taken note of the fact that Edwards looks bloody dodgy under a high ball at fullback as well.
Yeah, disappointing try to concede.
Yeah, they're going to pepper him, mate. They will absolutely pepper him with the Storm.
And obviously a big thing for Penrith as well is if Brian Toa comes back.
Toa, yeah.
Yeah, big loss, obviously. At the weekend, and yeah, they need him back. They need the full contingent out to beat the Melbourne Storm. I know they beat him in round 3 without Cleary, but this is a finals game. It's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? And obviously they've got all the big guns back now, Pappenhausen, obviously Brandon Smith in the form of his life, Harry Grant. It's an embarrassment of riches, isn't it?
It really is, you know. And again, you know, they lose a Cameron Smith, they find two world-class hookers. You know, they lose Cooper Cronk, Jerome Hughes from nowhere.
It's depressing.
They lose Slater. If they lose Slater, you can either have Pappenhausen or Hines at fullback, and they're both fantastic.
Yeah. God, it is depressing. It is an embarrassment of riches. But again, it's testament to their system and the process they've got on the. Obviously, they can bring through those plays because they have that system. So, fair play to them. They're the envy of the rugby league world. They really are.
And their reserves, mate, and their feeder clubs are all in. They're all in Queensland. You know, 1,200 kilometres away from where they play their home games. The equivalent would be Hull having their reserves in Morocco.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Can you imagine?
That's phenomenal.
Hull v Rovers reserves in Marrakesh. Bring it on.
In Marrakesh? You'd go to that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it'd be an experience. I've seen Hull play in Australia. Why not Morocco? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Nice. Marrakesh. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. But yeah, bring on the NRL finals. Obviously, 3 games to go in the NRL. Obviously, Super League playoffs as well. That'd be interesting. Obviously, hope Warrington get a win this weekend. That goes without saying. But yeah, I hope Catalans can finish the job because they deserve to, and it'll be absolutely fantastic for French Rugby League. Moving on to our Hull FC Down Under connections, and we've done all the NRL clubs now. So thought we'd move on to Origin and LFC players that have previously played for either New South Wales or Queensland.
Yes. So New South Wales is a longer list than Queensland. Queensland's a pretty short list, and the only Queensland ones are Berrigan, Dave Brown, Greenhill, Matt Singh, Jason Smith, and that's it. So a really short list, and that's basically because we've tended to pick our imports from the Sydney clubs, and when you go down the list of New South Wales clubs, you really kind of get that. So David Boyle, ex Souths, played for us in New South Wales. Dave Brooks, ex West Tigers. Noel Cleal, ex Manly. Craig Fitzgibbon, number of clubs, but probably more famous for being a Rooster, played for New South Wales. Steve Folks from the Bulldogs, only ever played for us, New South Wales, the Bulldogs, and Australia. They were the four teams he ever pulled on the jersey for. Jeff Gerrard, who played for in 86, right at the end of his career, was a New South Wales rep, as was Des Hasler. Graham Mackay, another one of Graham Mackay's jerseys. He's come up more often on this. It's fantastic. I love it. John Muggleton, Peter Sterling's brother-in-law, Peter Sterling himself, of course. Mark O'Mealy and Josh Reynolds, obviously, is a current player. Plus also the year that the comp split and there was Super League Origin and ARL Origin, Sean Ryan played for the Super League Origin team, coming out of the Cronulla Sharks. And then also three players that have played for New South Wales but coached Hull: Roy Simmons, Phil Sigsworth, and Brett Hodgson, of course. Brett Hodgson very famously got dragged over the sideline by Gordon Tallis while he was playing for New South Wales, and Tallis absolutely ragged him over the sideline, which is an amazing piece of footage.
Yeah, it's very famous, like a ragdoll, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're talking about Morocco as well, let's not forget that there was a Moroccan that played for Hull, Hussein Mbarki.
Brilliant.
Played for Hull in 1987, more famous for being a Fulham player, played for Fulham in the early 80s, then went to Warrington and Oldham, and then came to Hull 87-88, 13 appearances, one try. A decent player. Hussein Mbarki scored against Leeds in a game that we beat Leeds in 88, immediately before Brian Smith came.
Let's get the Mbarki Cup, Hull v London in Morocco. There's your marketing ploy, let's do it.
There's your marketing ploy, yeah. The Hussein Mbarki Marrakesh Challenge. There you go.
Fantastic. Yeah, good to end on a bit of positive there, because it does get absolutely draining ranting about Hull FC all the time. But unfortunately, one thing we have tried to do throughout this year is call it as we see it, and we've rode every emotion, haven't we? It's been a roller coaster at times, and I suppose it's been like that for me for 20 years, but for you for 40, and that's how it's always been, and it probably always will be.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I'm a glutton for punishment, mate. I'll be here next year, no matter what happens.
Yeah, absolute idiots, aren't we? Like lambs to the slaughter. As soon as that membership letter comes through the post, yeah, go on, man, I'll renew. Tickets for Wakefield away? Go on, then.
Yeah, if I have to.
And unfortunately, that's what it is. It's embedded into you. But yeah, we've rode the joy when we've had it this year. And obviously, we've been in despair as well when the sorrow comes. And we've just got to hope that we get our business decisions at Hull FC right now. We get rid of the players that are deemed surplus to requirements. Not by us, though, and not by the club hierarchy, but by Brett Hodgson. That's the key thing here. And we've got to back Brett Hodgson. Whatever he wants, he needs to get, and we've got his way of playing. You either like it, or as you say, you lump it.
Yeah, you can't cut him loose after not giving him what he wants.
Yeah, exactly that. Leave that there for this edition of the podcast. We will be back. That's not it for this year. We've got a couple of specials lined up over the autumn, or as I say, Rich's summer. Summertime approaching for Rich now in Australia.
Yes, I'll do them in the garden, mate. No worries.
You just start to, didn't you? You just start to. But yeah, thanks for your time, mate, as always, and come on, you all.
Cheers, mate. See ya.